Mostly sunny in the afternoon with a high near 36, light southeast wind. Tonight, snow mainly after 2 a.m. The snow could be heavy at times, low around 25. Calm wind becoming northeast 5 to 8 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 80%. New snow accumulation says 3 to 7 inches here. I think we've all heard it's going to be a lot more. Tuesday, more snow, could be heavy at times, high near 30. Blustery with a north wind 18 to 21 miles per hour with gusts as high as 34 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 100%. It's going to be a snow day. New snow accumulation of 10 to 14 inches possible. Tuesday night, chance of snow. Mostly cloudy with a low around 21. Northwest wind 8 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New snow accumulation of less than 1 inch possible. Wednesday, another chance of snow. Mostly cloudy with a high near 31. Northwest wind 8 to 16 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New snow accumulation of less than a half inch possible. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 15. And by the time we get to Thursday, we are now mostly sunny with a high near 32. Snow is over.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters, the award-winning show of NAMI, and it's gone compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no paid staff. We work out of our houses, use our own phones, that sort of thing. And what we try to do is we try to help people who either have a mental illness get help that they get the help they need, or we help families who have someone in their family or know of someone or live next to someone or whatever, work with someone who has a mental illness. And we do it in various ways. We have support groups that meet monthly, and there's no registration and, you know, nothing. You just come. We have teach classes. There's a 12-week course called Family to Family, which has folks come who either, like I said, know someone or have someone in their family who has mental illness. There's a basics course, which is for families who have children who have a mental health issue under 17. And we try to help what they call CIT training. It's crisis intervention training, which is a training for police officers who go to house, get on calls where folks have someone with mental illness who is acting out or whatever. Everything we do is free. There is no cost. There's no cost for booklets or material or anything. And if you're interested in learning more about NAMI Hunterdon, you can call 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't have someone manning the phone 24/7, but we do check it at least twice a day, and we promise we will get back to you. Today, we are very privileged to have with us, and they're smiling, why we are privileged to have you. Safe in Hunterdon is here. I'm surrounded by four lovely ladies, and I feel like I'm lucky because I'm in this room by myself with four lovely ladies. We have Maddie Zeidel. I said it right. All right. Who is a prevention specialist. Okay. Marion Shila?
Miriam
Chalet. Chalet. I'm sorry. Like the, okay. And you are also a prevention coordinator, correct? We have Tracy Sala?
Saya.
Saya? Oh, okay. And you're the director of child and adolescent services, correct? Okay. If you two ladies would bring that mic over to you a little more and speak into it a little bit there. Now, you do prevention, correct?
Yeah.
I'm going off my list here. So, prevention. In what way? What do you do for prevention? Either one of you, it doesn't matter. Somebody answer it.
Before the assault occurs. So that's primary prevention.
And how do you do that? Through the schools or?
So what we do is we, through tabling events, awareness activities, and getting involved in the schools, doing presentation education at schools about various sexual violence topics.
Okay. We're going to come back to prevention.
Okay.
How did SAFE get started?
I can answer that. So SAFE started in the 1970s as a grassroots movement. And over the decades, they added components to SAFE. There is a safe house where women who are in immediate danger can flee their home and have a safe place to stay.
Okay.
That's a very short period of time, up to 60 days, that they can stay in our safe house. Another component that we added through the years is a transitional house, where there is an application process, and they can apply to live in the transitional house for anywhere from 18 to 24 months, and that is independent living, where you're getting back on your feet. So you mm-hmm. might be going to school, you might be getting a job, and you are in a transitional period to, then move out and find your own house, apartment,
right.
whatever your next goal is. We also have, we have a child and adolescent department. We offer counseling for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. We have a children's program that's called PALS, and that serves children ages 3 through 12 who are affected by domestic violence. We offer teen counseling, and we offer an additional child counseling piece for somebody who may want a more immediate and shorter stay than our lengthy PALS program. Again, we have legal services for women who need restraining orders. We have prevention.
Anything else? Financial empowerment.
Financial empowerment. So over the decades, we have kept adding components to offer more holistic services to the community members.
Do you find that a woman and her children, when they come to SAFE, what effect does it have on the children? Whether the woman is physically abused or mentally abused or whatever, what effect does that have on the kids?
It has a strong effect,
I would imagine,
on the children. They are, oftentimes, it's hard to categorize, really, to put it in a box. I mean, children have a variety of ways of coping. They can be the perfect child because they don't want to make matters worse. They can act out. They can develop, anxiety, depression. It really runs the gamut of how a child can cope in that situation.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it just boggles my mind that, people can do that to other human beings.
Absolutely.
And little kids, real quickly, I have someone who my wife and I know from way back in high school, and he's married, has kids, grandkids, and we used to go to dinner with him periodically, every couple months, and it was his birthday coming up, so I reached out and called him, and I get his wife on the phone, and she says, "Oh, you can't talk to so-and-so." I said, "Oh, really? Why not?" She says, "He's in prison." Prison. She says, yeah. He would, for the last almost 2 years, babysit his granddaughter. And he was molesting her. Mm. And she was 7 when they found out about it. I just was mind-boggled. I mean, I've known this guy for more years than I care to count. And never, ever would have suspected, you know. And you just forget him, but the 7-year-old, you know. Right. And, you know, what is that going to affect her as she gets older and in her life? You know, it just, I don't know.
Well, I think that's the biggest misconception about perpetrators. I think when you learn about a perpetrator through TV, you think it's that the guy that's going to, like, come up in a dark alley and he's wearing a hoodie and he looks like the Unabomber. You know, that's not what a perpetrator looks like. That's a perpetrator, especially with sexual violence, it's usually typically someone you know. It's an acquaintance. It's, unfortunately, it's a friend. Unfortunately, it's a family member. It's usually somebody that you allow to get close to you. It's not a complete stranger. That does happen, but it's actually very rare when you look at research and you look at the statistics on sexual assault. So that's why it's not surprising. But I think it's the way that the media tells us who and what perpetrators look like. So when that does happen, we're all like, what? Like, how is that person a perpetrator? It's like, well, that's it can be anybody, really.
Well, yeah, no, I understand that. It's just that usually when it's someone you know real well for a long period of time and you never would have associated that with them, you know, it's just like it boggles my mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just can't get my mind around it, you know.
And this is Tracy, the co-host. Domestic violence cuts across all economic levels too, right? That's probably another misperception.
Absolutely. Yes, it transcends all socioeconomic levels. There is no discrimination when it comes to domestic violence or sexual assault.
Right. So let's talk about how someone ends up in a shelter. You have some meetings where you go out to a home sometimes, or are they referred through the police, EMTs? What's the progression?
We do have a domestic violence liaison. So if there is a call in the middle of the night, we do have volunteers that make up our DVRT and our SART. So those are the response team for domestic violence and sexual assault. If there's a call in the middle of the night, whoever that volunteer is associated and acquainted with SAFE. So right then and there, they can tell them about what we offer and try to get them hooked up with services right at the time. So that's our initial gateway into clients where something immediate has happened.
When you said you tell them about them, what happens if it's right in the middle of an episode? Does this volunteer go over? Do the police go over?
The police are always called.
Okay.
And then a response person comes to the station or the hospital, whichever the client is brought.
Are the women and children usually taken out right then in the middle of the episode? Because it seems to me that would be safer maybe than waiting until the next day when there are all these apologies and now it's harder for the woman and family to leave.
That's correct. Yes, if the police are called, they will usually remove them from the situation.
Okay.
Most of our sexual assault cases happen at Hunterdon Medical Center, which is pretty close to us.
Right.
It's right down the street. So,
okay.
If there's a case that, so like Tracy said, that our DVRT and SART response teams, they're meeting these victims and survivors usually, typically at the Hunterdon Medical Center. Usually if it's a sexual assault, it's to do a rape kit, and then if it's domestic violence, it's typically at the police station.
Okay. So if the woman and family are removed immediately, obviously there are still all their possessions and clothes and so forth at the home. How does the family adjust quickly, and how can you help them?
So unfortunately, when in those situations when those families are looking out for themselves and their children and their own safety, they're usually not thinking about grabbing their toothbrush or grabbing diapers for the baby or grabbing formula. So our safe house does try to provide our victims and survivors with as much products and food and like all the toiletries and everything that they would need. However, we are a nonprofit organization, so we can always use more, obviously. And so that's why it's always really nice when our community donates products, and like sometimes it's just cleaning products, or it's just formula or diapers, or different sizes, because we sometimes get infants or we get toddlers, and so.
It's why do you feel any one of you actually that only half of the domestic violence cases are reported, and only 15-35% of the sexual cases are reported? Why do you feel that is? Maddie, you haven't said anything, so you want to say something? Yeah, feel free. Go ahead.
Well, I think that they're not always reported because they're either afraid of their attacker. There could be a retribution if they do go and call the police. Sometimes there is that apologetic phase where the perpetrator will apologize and say they won't do it again, and so then the victim might not leave then. There might be a stigmatism around it, so they might not want to tell their friends and family, different reasons like that.
Yeah, I can understand that, but it's hard to grasp that if someone is being assaulted, whether it's physically or sexually or mentally, because it doesn't have to be physical, it could be mental too, as I'm sure you all well aware, that you'd want to get the hell out of there, and why would you want to stay? That I have hard trouble grasping that. It would seem to me you'd want to get out and get out as quick as you could. Especially if it's not the first time or the second or the third. And regardless of what the assaulter is saying, oh, how sorry they are, or whatever, it just seems like it's going to happen again, and why stay? Why put your family or kids or whatever in, keep them in that situation?
I think it could be for a number of reasons. I think a lot of people do stay because of the children. I think also a lot of victims don't see a way out. Unfortunately, they don't, because they've been putting up with it for so many years, and they just don't see, they've accepted this as their reality, and they really don't see a way out. And I think a lot of people just stay for the kids, and they don't want to break up the family, and they don't want to break up the home.
Right, and sometimes they don't know that they have other options. Knowledge is power. So doing something like this on the radio and talking about SAFE, there is an educational piece to this that people don't really realize or understand. So, when you do finally come to find out or just receive some education, well, that's your first step, that's your power, but it takes a long time, because if you're financially dependent, if you have no family in this state, how hard it is just to make ends meet, and we all have jobs. Could you imagine being uneducated, not having employment? All those compounding issues make it very, very difficult for.
Do you find that some, yeah, it's mostly women, but there are men who get abused too. So,
absolutely.
I mean, not as many, I would assume. I mean, I'm guessing here, but I'm sure that there are some. But do you find that the person who's accepting this or doesn't do anything, even though that they know there may be avenues where they can go to get help, because they feel it's, well, this is the life I chose and this is, you know, what I'm stuck living with?
I think it does have a lot to do, if we're talking about victims who are women, and sometimes men too. I have over my career worked with, I'm not more than three male victims, but I have. And it's the same course of power and control. Mm-hmm. And it's the same, you know, putting somebody down, breaking, you break the person in order for them to feel like they're not good enough to move out into the world on their own. So they doubt their ability, their strength. You know, they don't feel like they can do it. And that comes, you know, over years. Your best bet is your first incident to get out.
Right.
You know, and that's if you haven't grown up with this. The problem with domestic violence is that it's intergenerational. So, you know, again, that's why programs like PALS, you know, we want to break the intergenerational pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So we want kids to know, oh, well, this is what happened. So while it's therapeutic, there's an educational piece. You know, again, knowledge is power. So you have to just keep educating your communities.
Do you feel that it's a reflection of bullying? Because you hear so much now about bullying in school, and the person who is bullying someone, do you feel that they could grow up into the situation and actually then beat their wife
cousins.
Or whatever? I'm sorry?
They're cousins.
Yeah.
You know, bullying and DV are definitely related to each other.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, I think that it's... I think it's sad.
Right. It's not a predisposition.
No,
but,
no.
Sure.
And I don't know, I'm not psychologist or anything, but it seems to me if you're the person being bullied, like in high school, that could continue, you know, through life or through your young adult life,
It can make you more vulnerable, sure,
right.
If you don't know, if
and
you
more
don't have
acceptable
the skills.
Of the, this is the way I've lived, and you know,
have the self-esteem to,
right.
You know, change your current situation.
Right, right.
Let's talk a little bit about what happens in the shelter the first couple of days and how long the family stays and what the goals are at that point.
The goals are really to meet their immediate and safety needs. It is a short-term stay. So the case managers work with the families to try to get what they can. Sometimes a police officer can accompany a family back to the home to collect some belongings, sometimes not. So when a woman's or family's in the shelter, it really is just to meet those immediate needs and then help them get on to some other permanent form of housing.
Okay. So when you say short term, are we talking about less than 2 weeks or?
No, we're talking about a maximum of 60 days.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
On average.
Okay. So when you talk about permanent. So there's transitional would be included in that or as an interim step anyway.
Clients can apply for transitional housing.
Okay.
So there are requirements because it is a long-term setting and we want them to have success. So if somebody feels they're going to move, you know, out of state to Florida, well, they're not going to be a good candidate for the transitional housing program. You know, during that time, this is a time to get back on your feet. So, you know, how are you planning out these next 18 months? Are you going to school? You know, is there a trade? So it is for people who have no other recourse, who fit the requirements. Some people do. They move out of state. They go with family. You know, there are other options.
Okay. Maddie, she's laughing and blushing over there. How did you get into this prevention part of it?
So I started this work in I went to school for social work, and I actually worked at, I interned at a, it was kind of like a counseling department at Rutgers University. They're called the Office for Violence Prevention and Victim Assistance. So they're a specific department that helps victims of domestic violence and sexual violence. So a big part of my role there was to counsel different victims, but it was also to kind of spread awareness on the issue of sexual violence and domestic violence. So a big part of that was going into the community and either holding events that kind of educated the community, or holding trainings, things like that. So it really started in college.
Okay.
Or grad school.
Then how'd you get into SAFE?
I mean, well, actually, my my old supervisor was my professor. So at SAFE, so that's kind of how I learned about SAFE, and I saw that there was an opening for prevention, and I love prevention work, so that's kind of how I got over here.
Okay. Now, besides the schools, how do you do prevention? I know you said you go to the schools, and which is great. Don't get me wrong. I think it's wonderful. But what else do you do? I mean, because a lot of the people that are quote-unquote victims are not in school, you know, so how else do you help people become aware of this?
Well, they say that the younger you educate, the better, so that you can really prevent violence from happening. We also go to different community-wide events to kind of spread awareness on the services that we have. So we went to the Hunterdon County Expo.
Where I met you.
Yes, so we were there, you know, spreading awareness on who we were and what resources we can give out. So we try to go to different events like that throughout in the community. We also connect with local businesses. So we actually, this past weekend, we connected with, or was that 2 weekends ago? We connected with an acupuncture business in town, and we held an event called 1 Billion Rising, which is all about kind of people rising against violence. And we had this great event at the Stengel Factory where they had speakers from Meta Theater, and we went and spoke about kind of the services that we offered. So, you know, trying to partner with agencies outside of our own agency, that has definitely helped. We also work with Raritan Valley Community College.
Okay.
So we do try to work with student groups there and try to educate there as well.
Yeah. I know that Raritan Valley does a lot of good work, quote unquote, to not only for violence and sexual abuse, but for other aspects, mental illness and what have you. They hold a lot of projects, you know, a lot of expos or type things like that, you know. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I think a lot of the women who are in these situations are very isolated. They become isolated because of that whole power thing you were talking about. Do you find that many women, are they aware that there is a shelter? And isn't there a shelter in almost every county in New Jersey?
There is a shelter in every county in New Jersey.
Do you find that most women who are victims of domestic violence know about these shelters?
I don't know. That's hard to say.
Do they get there and say, wow, I never knew this existed, that kind of thing?
I can't speak to that piece because I don't, I don't work in. But it is part of, it should be part of the national hotline. You know, when you go on to any kind of hotline for the state, I would imagine the numbers pop up for each domestic violence agency in the county. So I think that is a resource that's made available if anybody's searching.
Do you happen to have any local hot or national hotline numbers available? We could just jump in right now with contact for Even Safe.
Safe in Hunterdon has a 24-hour hotline. Okay. So you can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And the toll-free hotline number is 888-988-4033.
Okay, let's repeat that for people.
So again, the toll-free hotline number for Safe and Hunterdon is 888-988-4033.
And people can call with any kind of concern that they have.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, someone comes and, you know, somehow or other through whatever process gets to your safe house. How do you help them start a new life? What is some of the process that they go through or can go through?
Well, I guess it's you.
Yeah.
Hi, just checking. Again, we're trying to meet their immediate needs. So we want to see, okay, where are you going to live? Okay, that's the first thing. Are you working? Let's get you connected with counseling. So a lot of it is the resources, you know. So it's important for us to also know what's going on in our community so we know how to help people and where to tell them to get, you know, are they in the Work First program? Like, you know, tell me what you need. And then the Safe House's job is to go, okay, let's try and check some of those off and get you to a point where you can start to begin. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. In the back of my mind, I've been thinking, sometimes it's hard for me to think, so, you know, but Tracy can tell you, but a youth, let's say a young boy, and he's in an abusive situation with his parents or mother or whatever, do you find that they don't want to talk about it, or they find it very hard to talk about and don't talk about it? And, you know, I think out holding it in could probably be worse than talking about it. So what do you find?
That's absolutely correct. It depends on the child. Some teenage boys are okay with talking about it. Some are not. It really depends on the individual. So one of the things that we do at SAFE is the adolescent can opt to speak with a counselor who does just verbal communication, like your traditional cognitive behavioral therapy. But we've also added a component where they can meet with one of our creative arts therapists. So our music therapist and our art therapist will see teens as well, which is sometimes a really nice introduction for somebody who doesn't necessarily want to have that face-to-face. You know, there's, as you can imagine, there's a lot of shame that is associated with growing up in a domestic violence situation, and they are embarrassed and they're shameful and they don't want to admit this out loud. So, you know, that's one of the wonderful things about creative arts therapy is that you can have, you don't have to start with that. You can start with something else, but it will always move into it. You know, it will always reflect the person's inner thoughts, feelings, experiences. That is never, it never not comes out because you do project into what you're doing.
If you get someone that just absolutely doesn't want to talk about it, what do?
Then they don't have to talk. I mean, if they show up every week but they're not ready to talk, then we just hang together and we sit and we wait for them to a point where they feel comfortable and ready. You know, there's no forcing the situation.
Now, do you find that, how do I word this? Do you find that men or young men or older men or middle-aged men or whatever who are abused, do you find that it's hard for them to speak as well as a young woman?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It makes, at that point, you know, a child is a child. So, you know, the decision comes later on how they want to use that experience when they're an adult. You know, do they identify with the perpetrator or do they identify with the victim? You know, and that's one of the things that we often help kids with. You know, they're made up of both parents. So they have to know that they're their own person. It's not their fault. That this is something adults make their own choices. It's not a reflection of them or anything they've done. And to know that they don't have to be either or, that you help them grow and identify into their own person, where this is something that has happened, but they don't have to be identified by
it. Right. And is it the same process with an adult male?
Well, with an adult male, and this is, you know, this is my own personal experience, but yes, you are going back and you have to work through the trauma that you've never worked through before in order to begin to see how it's impacted the choices that you make as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So that is some of the work is always, if it's intergenerational, you know, if the reason that you're an adult abuser is because you grew up with it and you never dealt with it. You know, that's
right.
Different. That's not every case, but it is a component sometimes.
And I know that males are not as, the percentage is a lot lower than women, yes. So, you know, consequently, I don't imagine you see as many males as you do women.
Correct.
But, you know, but you probably do see youth. Male youth, which, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
One thing I'm finding out today is how much help there is available beyond just a safe house. I'm hearing about these other programs. You mentioned something like possibly even a staff of 40, some are part-time or whatever, where there might be only 16 people in treatment or something. So we have people representing these really great programs, PALS program and prevention. I think we want to get into each of those a little bit more. Why don't we start with PALS just a little bit more? Tell us a little bit more about what happens in PALS.
Sure. So PALS is a state grant funded program for children ages 3 through 12.
Okay.
It's a year-long program. That's where children receive one-to-one therapy. Now, it's all creative arts therapists that work in the PALS program. So we have an art therapist, a music therapist, dance movement therapist, and a drama therapist. So children that come in will be connected to one of the therapists for individual therapy. And it can happen subsequently, but it usually doesn't for timing purposes. But then they are also in a group. They're offered a group with their peers with a different modality, so that they're getting the one-on-one time to be able to talk about their individual experience. But the other important piece of this is the group, so that you're dealing with the universality. So the things like, this only happens to me and nobody else, and I'm ashamed, and I don't want, you know, no other kids ever have been through this before. Well, that's where we try to change that perception and say, you know, this is something that happens, and then this wonderful group forms, and they're able to, you know, work on things in a social setting.
Right. So some of these children presumably have already left your transitional housing and they aren't necessarily still in a safe house or transitional. They could be anywhere.
Correct. And the majority of our clients in the PALS program really come from outside of our transitional house and safe house. So, you know, any of those calls that we talked about, DIFUS. People sometimes just find us on their own. They're looking for a service, and we are a free service. And this is all we do. So we are experts in our field. We deal with domestic violence, so we understand, you know, the ins and outs of that and the dynamics and how to best help children that have been in that situation.
Right. So the goal, too, besides helping the children, is to try to prevent the cycle from reoccurring.
Exactly.
As they grow up.
Correct.
Right.
And we also work with the non-offending parent in the PALS program, so that they are receiving some sort of parenting counseling help. So, you know, if your child is now in their never been to therapy before. The family has never discussed this. This is the opportunity. So, you know, the non-defending parent's going to have trouble with that too. They're going to need support in supporting their child. So working with the family, you know, we work with the entire family.
So are these parents coming on a one-to-one basis or?
They are. They are. And then they are invited into the child's individual therapy session for a family session. So every 6 weeks or so, it's up to the therapist's discretion. You know, I think we're going to have a family session today. Okay. Something has come up. We need to discuss it. And we embrace it that way.
So this would be a one-year program for anyone who's involved.
Correct.
That's great.
How are you funded then?
We are funded, we're state funded through DCF, Division of Family Services.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's not like a grant or anything?
It is a grant.
It is a grant. Right. That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure.
Yep, we're a grant.
Okay.
So there's no fee for services.
What would you call a success story out of that? What would be the ideal outcome for somebody going through that program?
Well, the ideal program would be somebody who starts and finishes with us, that is able to stay the length of the program and receive the treatments. When the children are able to disclose what's happened. They have treatment goals. Mm-hmm. So we are looking at, you know, where are we starting with? What do we need to help you with? And then we reevaluate those every 3 months. So as children meet those goals, you know, we know that we're doing right by them. And the family as a whole connects. You know, mother becomes, is able to engage, you know, reports good reports from home, we're building family time, we're restructured, we do this different, we do that different. We have fun together. You know, fun isn't something that happens when you're living in a domestic violence situation. There is no fun and happy times and going to the movies, things that we take for granted. So that's a huge win. When they, you know, you let your guard down and, okay, yeah, we went to the zoo this weekend. You know, that's amazing.
Right, right. If you guys in prevention had wanted something, anything at all, to improve Safe in Hunterdon, what would it be? More what?
More support from the community, more support from the schools. I mean, we do have great support from the schools, but I think more awareness. And I feel like people still, even though it's 2017, it's like when you hear sexual violence or sexual assault, they automatically turn off. And it's like, you know, the more knowledge and the more education you have about it, the less likely it's going to occur, and that's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to traumatize anyone or have a difficult conversation with anyone. We're just trying to have these discussions and bring education to students.
Do you think it's a stigma involved in it?
Yes, definitely.
No, it's a stigma involved with mental health too.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah. You know? So, I think people think that if we don't talk about it, it will go away, and that's not the truth. That's not true, unfortunately. The less we talk about it, the more it will.
Right, absolutely.
So that's why we are out in community events, and we try to be out in different community events, like RVCC, because we know that with them we'll reach a different community, different audience. You know, we do a lot of work with the high schools, and with them we're reaching a different audience. And
right.
The reason why we came out to the Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce was because, you know, you're reaching a completely different audience than your typical, our typical audience is
right,
high school
right.
students. And I think a lot of times it's just educating the parents. I think sometimes we have to educate the adults first before we can really educate the children.
What do you feel the community could do more to help?
Bring more awareness, and you know, if we are going to do a presentation at your school, come. You know, we do a lot of activities, and we have a lot of events, and you know, last month we had an event at North Hunterdon High School about teen dating violence, because February is the National Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. You know, come out to that and support that. Next month we have a viewing of The Hunting Ground, which talks about campus sexual assault at North Hunterdon High School. You know, come to that. That event is open to all parents and students from Hunterdon County. So just coming to those events and showing your support and showing that your willingness to learn about something that you probably, you know, you may not have much information about. So,
now, do you get classroom time at all with the kids, or are you primarily after school special events?
Sometimes we do, depending on the school, depending on the teacher, depending on their willingness to bring us in, really. Uh-huh. Some teachers have asked us to come during their classroom time. We've been out to health classes before. Sometimes we just work with the after school club, so it is after school. So,
what about middle school? Do you get into or anything before high school? Do you do any educational activities with that?
We would like to, but it's very hard. It's hard to get into the high schools. It's even harder to get into the middle schools.
Right.
Again, like Mary was saying, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard for parents to let us in, and schools let us in, because they don't want us to traumatize their kids with this information, which sometimes that's the perception that that'll happen, which is not the case. It's just educating and on healthy relationships. You know, we don't necessarily, you know, we're not always talking about sexual violence. We can talk about healthy relationships. That's a very big, important component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have gone out to Clinton Public School. Mm-hmm. I think it was 7th graders or 8th graders. It was definitely 8th graders that we went out to, and we did a presentation about healthy relationships with them. But that's the only middle school that we've been out to. But, you know, these teens have never... I think talking about healthy relationships and what the warning signs and what the... what the different components are to a healthy relationship is so important, especially because these teens are getting into relationships and they've never been into one before, so they have nothing to really compare it to.
Right.
So they're really not sure what to expect. Also, if you come from a family where, let's say, one of your parents are in an unhealthy relationship, so now you're comparing it to that. So that's why it is really important, and which is why healthy relationships is a very big part of sexual violence. I think it's like, I think you have to talk about healthy relationships and what your boundaries are, and then talk about sexual violence, because that really sets the whole tone.
And that's a lot of material to cover too,
of
in
course.
A short period of time.
Yeah, and it's
so
like
40
minutes.
You have to really, right.
All right, we're in Hunterdon County. Do you find that this happens in every municipality in the county?
So we have researched that domestic violence and sexual assault has occurred in 14 out of the 26 municipalities in Hunterdon County. Like we've said before, domestic violence and sexual assault does not discriminate. It doesn't discriminate between gender, races, or even a social economic status. You know, Hunterdon County is a very affluent county. It's like top three or top two in the state of New Jersey.
It's fourth in the country.
Fourth in the country, yeah. You know,
I don't know what I'm doing here. I'll tell you.
You know, it may look different compared to like Camden County, but it's really the same thing. It's at the end of the day.
Well, in our research, you know, the research that we've done, it says that, you know, we've had domestic violence calls in 14 out of the 26 municipalities. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's not happening in the other municipalities.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
These are the only cases that we're aware of.
Well, the ones that were reported.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's so many of them that don't get reported. I think the way that in an affluent county like Hunterdon County, reports are a lot less compared to if you looked at Camden County, if you looked at Essex County, there's a lot of the stigma that people don't want. You know, people don't want to report because they don't want their neighbors to find out. They don't want the police at their house. So with a more affluent county, you're dealing a lot with that. You're dealing a lot more with the reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want people to find out that, you know.
That was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, Tracy. When you have the kids and you talk about stigma, is this something that kids should be hiding from their classmates, or is it something they would be better off talking about? I have this situation in my home, you know, what's best for them?
I think if there's a trusting adult in the school, you know, if they have a teacher they can confide in, you know, sharing with their peers, it depends on what age. Yeah. You know, if you're talking elementary school students, you know, I don't know, you know, another second grader, you know what I mean?
That.
Yeah. I don't know how they would be able, they don't have the skill set themselves
right.
to be able to support. So, you know, but I think a teacher or somebody that they can confide in, because then even if they go see the school counselor some way to kind of just help support them. I mean, if a kid comes to an adult in the school, then it's really bothering them. Most children will.
Right, but don't you feel they have to trust the person to talk to them too?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Right. They're not going to want
right.
to share something that intimate with somebody that they don't think cares about them.
Right. Exactly. You know.
A few weeks ago, I don't know if you know someone named Diane Simovich from BW Nice, but she has an organization of women in business who donate to SAFE in Hunterdon every year. I think they first year they raise $10,000, and every year they... if people who don't belong to any organization, whatever, but they want to donate supplies, is there a way that they can do that? I know your location is secret, so how can they help?
Well, they can always donate to our main office in Flemington.
Okay.
Our address is 47 East Main Street in Flemington, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a protocol for
right.
for donations.
Yeah.
And I don't believe we accept clothing.
No.
We go through the Salvation Army, okay. Or I think we have a...
On our website, we do have a wish list.
Okay.
Gift cards are always really great,
okay.
just because some of the clients that we have... I mean, it varies. And also, sometimes it's just getting gas from Wawa to help them
mm-hmm.
out, or especially when it's really cold and it's going to be snowing like tomorrow, it's just, you know, a cup of coffee.
Gift cards
are really great.
Sorry. I know we gave a phone number. What website can people go to?
SAFEinHunterdon.org.
Okay, so that would be SAFEinHunterdon.org.
Okay.
Okay, and that tells people how and where
yes.
and what you need and
yes.
all that kind of thing. And obviously everything's tax deductible
yes.
and that kind of thing.
In the last 2 minutes, is there anything you want to tell?
We haven't covered.
Do you have a program coming up or something that you want to announce or whatever?
Well, like Mary was saying, we have a movie showing next month. I believe it's April 24th at North Hunterdon High School at 6:30. We're showing a documentary about college sexual assault. It's open to all high schools in the county and to their parents. We welcome them to come as well. So we have that coming up. We're working with Raritan Valley Community College on a few different events coming up. And we have... a presentation coming up, and so for the month of April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is why we have a couple of events coming up for April, and probably sometime in the summer or early fall we are planning to do a 5K run / 2K walk for some of us who are not runners.
Me too.
Just to bring the community more together and connected with Safe and Hunted In, because I know still a lot of people in this county are not familiar with Safe and Hunted In.
Right.
And to know where you can go to get resources if you are a victim or if you know somebody who is, or, you know, just being familiar with us. And it's just going to be a great way to get everybody connected with Safe and Hunted In and just to have a really fun way to talk about.
Do you accept checks?
Sure.
No, because I asked because the pastor of my church is getting married and they don't want gifts.
Oh, that's right.
They want checks to go to Safe and Hunterdon.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Yes, as long as it's made out to Safe and Hunterdon.
Yeah, down. That's fine.
Yeah.
Because you can expect one from me down the road. When they get married, we'll send you a check. I can't thank you ladies enough for coming. We've run out of time. But I really appreciate it. And real quick, we got safeandhunterdon.org, right?
Yes.
All right. What's the phone number? Come on, Maddie.
The 24-hour toll-free hotline number is 888-988-4033. Also, if you want to call our main office, the phone number is 908-788-7666.
Okay.
Do they have to register for the North Hunterdon event, or can they just show up?
No, they can just come.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We do appreciate you coming.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You're quite welcome. And you will come back.
Yes.
Okay.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication